96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand.
See you live off the record with Zhivago Lang is brought to you by Fidelity Bank of Bahamas, John West Shoes, RF Bank and Trust, and Raw Star Assurance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Zhivago Lang, your host. Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful, this afternoon. This is now Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday afternoon. I'm just kidding you all now. Well, welcome to Z Live on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. So happy that you could join us. Yeah, today, the day after we celebrated Majority Rule Day. I hope you had a wonderful holiday. Some interesting things happened on that day, but we'll talk about that maybe a little later. If you want to give us a call today on the show, the numbers to do so are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are, of course, live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow channel 612. So let me give you a lay of the land today. In the earliest portion of the show, I am going to be speaking with one of my colleagues at the Government and Public Policy Institute, who has initiated a very interesting and I believe important survey. We are in the 50th year of our independence as a country. And I imagine there are many things about ourselves we will be assessing in the course of this celebration and pondering our path forward. And perhaps if we knew a little better about certain things that we are about today, maybe we would chart that course a little bit more effectively. And so I have Mrs. Leslie Archer. She's going to be talking to us about that study in a little while. And then for the remainder of the show, I have a very special guest, the great Laverne Gardner, a talk show host herself, and one of those who has been a staple on Dwight's Morning Blend show, co-hosting from time to time with him. And we're going to have a discussion about a number of things. But so glad, again, that you could join us. Leslie, good afternoon. Welcome, ma'am.
Hello. Happy New Year, Bahamas. I'm so happy to be here. And thank you, Mr. Lang, again, for coming to our rescue.
My pleasure. Y'all will recall that Leslie led the Living Wage study which has gotten a great deal of attention and has been, impacting public and private policy along the way. And now in this 50th anniversary year, she's now set about on, I call it a deep quest. Is this not a deep quest, Leslie?
It's a deep quest, a conquest, whatever, anything you want to call it.
I mean, a deep quest to the extent of what it is seeking to find out.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Deep, got yes, it. D-E-E-P. Deep, yes, yeah. Definitely. I am getting into the culture of Bahamians, the culture of our lives. What exactly, who are we? Like, how can we tangibly define our culture? And I'm doing that by asking questions, you know, where do you value fidelity in marriage? How do you value, or what is your value on land and ownership of property? Do you value education? I want to find out these answers. And it's not just me, it's a team of us at the university and affiliates just trying to figure out how far have we come in 50 years of independence. You know, what were persons who were teenagers around the time of independence, where did they value certain, you know, virtues and traits? And what about the younger generation now? Are those values the same? Have we changed? What has influenced? And how is that manifesting? That's what we are doing for our country, what we want to find out.
And values are critical to behavioral patterns and lifestyles and attitudes, no?
Yes, definitely. When I say values, I mean both the tangible and the intangible assets or things that Bahamians consider important. And we are basically collecting this information through a survey done really just asking you what, basically two questions. How would you stereotype Bahamians? Would you describe Bahamians generally as honest people, as hardworking people, you know, as patriotic people? And then we ask, you know, how do you describe yourself as a Bahamian? And we're going to bring those two together, and then we're going to look at actual data from national statistics and see if there is any pull to where the money is, what is the divorce rate? How has that changed over 50 years compared to where people stand now on if they value fidelity in marriage? Like that type of angle we're coming at to just basically find empirical data to support what our culture is.
So if, in other words, let me not say in other words, but rephrase the way I would phrase it then is once you've captured this data, we get a sense of what our cultural values are. We'll be able to say, you know, well, it seems like the vast majority of people believe that fidelity in marriage is a good thing, or that they aren't really that important. Or a lot of people believe that honesty still matters a whole lot. More people believe honesty doesn't matter. And then we get to assume, it seems like, have a little bit of, we get to have some data in terms of our hypocrisy. Yeah, we say we like this. We say we like this, but we get a little bit of honesty. We believe Bahamians are dishonest, but we believe honesty is the right thing, right?
Right. We are really going to be able to put our finger on what is a Bahamian or who is a Bahamian. You know, I encourage you all to go to tinyurl.com/Bahamas50, T-I-N-Y, tinyurl.com/Bahamas50. And there's a survey that we really need you guys to support and answer. Anyone over the age of 18, if you've lived in the Bahamas for more than 18 consecutive months, and you're obviously capable of giving informed consent, please go to tinyurl.com/Bahamas50. And complete the survey. I mean, Mr. Lang, we're asking questions about how important is immediate family? How important is extended family to you, like grandparents? How important is it being married? How important is it to respect older generations? And the key here, like I said, we are trying to get a really large pool of respondents, especially age-wise, so I can understand how my Grammy is 83, and I have for her to complete the survey. I want to understand what she thinks about respecting older generations and how important is it for her to know her neighbors versus someone like me headed to 40 versus, you know, I have a sister who's not even 20 yet. Where do we stand on that spectrum with respecting older generations or being religious?
You were listening in on a conversation I was having with my son. It lasted for 2.5 long, rowing hours about who should say good morning or good afternoon first when they walk in the room. The adult person, the older person or the younger person. For 2.5 hours.
You know, but the thing is, too, with this study, it's going to be good to have this information, but I really want it to go into the hands of policymakers, which is why also we are getting a lot of as much data as we can access, national statistics, to see how it is affecting our numbers. Like, for example, there's a question on, do you value education? Or to what extent do you think Bahamians value achieving higher education or achieving an education, right? I want to look at what was the graduation rate in the 1970s versus what is the graduation rate now? And then I'm going to compare it with the survey, but I'm also going to be looking at what percentage of the government budget was dedicated towards education then versus what percentage of the budget is dedicated now. And I'm trying to see if I can, or we, our team is not just me, it's a team of 10 of us, and obviously supported by the Government and Public Policy Institute, how we can weave together a story, not just to understand who we are as Bahamians, but how did we get here? Tangibly, in terms of where has the money gone and what is the impact of the money in the budget wise, and what do the numbers show? What do the statistics show that can back up the data that I'm collecting on this survey? So we really, really need everyone possible to support, especially my men. Men, please. They'll have a wonderful reputation of not loving to complete surveys, but we really need your help. I really want your perspectives and your opinions for this response. And you can also message me 431-8355 if you want a copy of the survey, or I have QR codes, I have flyers, promotion, anything, any data or access to information you need to complete the surveys or to share it with others. You can send me a message and I will get on it as soon as possible.
Okay, and you can also, you can use my WhatsApp number 439-30432. And if you want the survey link, and I'll be able to send that to you, just as also you can send it to.
Yes, and I want to send a special shout out to Mr. Lang. People who have listened to me on his show over the years knows that he is my boss. And I thank him for this opportunity even to give younger persons and me as a policy fellow the opportunity to do this research and the freedom and the flexibility to pursue our personal passions in a professional way. So thank you so much for that, Mr. Lang. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And I'm already getting texts asking for the link. So something's working. Somebody's listening. Okay.
Fantastic. Thank you. Please share it. Share it, share, share with everyone. I'm trying to get this information out in time for the 50th. So that means analysis, data collection, data cleaning, analysis, write-up. I have to send it to editors, a lot of work. But the first thing, we really need the survey responses completed. I need almost about 2,000 persons to complete it to have a viable number. So fill it out.
And we're going to get that done because we're going to talk about it every single day until your closeout so that people remember. And so let's hear the URL again. Please say it slowly so they can hear it again.
Thank you. So the website is www.tinyurl.com/U as in umbrella, R as in rainbow, L as in love, tinyurl.com/, which is the line forward, Bahamas and the number 50. So Bahamas 50, tinyurl.com/Bahamas50. And then you'll see a pop-up Bahamas Cultural Value Survey. Mr. Lang also said you can WhatsApp him on the number, the Guardian Talk WhatsApp number. You can also WhatsApp me 431-8355. That's 431-8355. I can also give you physical copies if you have a group, especially senior citizens. I need their opinions who were younger around the time of independence, who are even adults, I guess, not adults. 30s, 40s, around the time of independence and where they are now. I want to understand, you know, what their value system is as well. So 431-8355 and tinyurl.com/Bahamas 50, the number 50, 50, in honor of our 50th anniversary of independence.
Now, don't send your text for the link to the Guardian's text number, because then I won't be able to send it to you. Send it to my 439-3043. So Leslie was right. I just needed to be sent to my number, 439-3043, as some people have already done. Also, Leslie, some of these folks who are sending me texts are very well-known people who have big networks, Gina. And so I'm going to send her a link. And I know she have all kinds of people she can send a link out to.
Right now, I literally, Mr. Lange, I'm talking to you, and I have my screen up, and I'm at 100 responses. I need around almost 2,000.
Yeah, we got work to do. We're going to get this done. So again, folks, this is our national cultural values study. It's a way to get a sense of, you know, really what do we believe when it comes to those things that matter to us? And that's what the value mattering to you. What are the social realities? What are the cultural realities? What are the spiritual realities that we say matter? Because in the end, these impact our attitude towards ourselves, toward each other, our attitudes toward other people, the way we approach the world, the way we see the world, the way we respond to issues, the way we respond to economic activity and events. I mean, you just can't get more important than understanding your own personal cultural values. That's why most of us, we are told when we do our personal development planning, we're told to define our vision, personal vision, define our personal mission. So your vision is, when I'm finished with myself in the world, this is what I'm going to look like. Right. My personal mission, this is what I want to do in the world in line with that vision. And my personal or core values, what are the things I believe in? Do I believe in honesty? Do I believe in faith? Do I believe in hard or diligent work? Do I believe in education? These are things that if we are honest about them in terms of whether they reflect our true value, then over time, they're the things that come through in our behavior and our attitudes, right? Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's one thing to talk about it, but I really want now, let's put pen to paper and let me see us put our money where our mouth is. You know, even I asked questions about the type of organizations. You know, I remember, I think I was reading, you know, Woman Take Two in junior high school about the female version of the lodge or something. I can't remember what his name, but there used to be a lot of community activity and community organizations. And I'm asking, you know, are you a part of any organizations now? You know, even things like that, where is our level of activity with social engagement, with community engagement? So we're really getting to the crux of this. And I just want to shout out Salesis, the Sir Arthur Lewis Institute of Socioeconomic Studies in Cave Hill, that is offering me external support for this study. When Barbados had their 50th anniversary of independence many years ago, their prime minister commissioned a research study to find out the culture of Bajans, their people, and I work with them. And so that inspired me, and they are fully up and they've given me their full support. I said, well, our independence is coming up, and let's do this and let's figure it out for Bahamians. So this research actually will enable us to have a conversation of embrace with our Caribbean neighbors as well, to understand, you know, Bahamians think we different, right? Mm-hmm. So let's put our money where let's put our paper and our pen where our mouth is as well, to see exactly where we stand with this other Caribbean country that has done a similar study as well. So it's like a comparative study in that sense, which makes it even more viable and strong as a research piece. So I just want to shout them out and say thank you to them very much. And Don Marshall, the executive director there, for his support.
Laverne Gardner, I know you have 600,843 people in your network that you can send this to so we could get this done.
I wish I had all of those people, but even as you and Leslie are speaking, I am typing, I'm posting it. on my social media platforms.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that so much.
That's a great idea, because I didn't even think about that. I'm going to post that on my Facebook page. That way they can access it that way too.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much.
I'm going to tell you, getting help last week. Hi, Z. This is Gina Knowles. Please text me the link. I'll post on Knowles Knows. This survey needs to be answered, says Gina. This text says, please ask the guest to slowly repeat the email address for the survey. Thanks.
Sorry, I'm so excited. Mr. Lang, can you say it slow? Let me say it slow.
You say it. You can say it very slow.
The website for the survey is tinyurl. So it just means an abbreviated version of the longer form, T-I-N-Y, tinyurl, U as in umbrella, R as in rainbow, L as in love, tinyurl.com, .com/, so that's the slash thing, Bahamas 50. So tinyurl.com/Bahamas50. Once you type that in, the survey should automatically pop up for you to complete. And additionally, you can message Mr. Lang's private WhatsApp number that he will share with you. You can also message me at 431-8355. And I can get you, I have flyers, I have QR code. If you need physical copies of the survey, more than willing. Community service organizations, I need senior citizens' response. So if you are able to go into senior citizens' communities and willing to do this as a community service initiative to have them, to help them complete the survey, that's also something I'm open to, providing physical copies when necessary for engagement to help community service activities.
Well, Gina says she got 40,000 in her group, so we must even get 1% of them, and that's a good way to wait.
That would be fantastic. Thank you so much, Miss Gina. Thank you, and thank you so much, Miss Gardner, as well. Thank you so much.
All right, so Leslie, you'll be back to talk about it as we move along. So thank you so very much, and good luck. And I know it's gonna happen. We appreciate it.
I hope so. I pray that we meet our deadline. Thank you, and I hope you guys rest of your show.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to this is Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. When we come back, I'm going to have a conversation with Laverne Gardner. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
All of your banking with Fidelity. Quality services what they give to you and me. A strong management team is waiting to serve you. Come and bank with Fidelity too. Come do all of your banking with Fidelity. Quality services what they give to you and me. A strong management team is waiting to serve you. So bank with Fidelity, we're good for you.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon, the Wednesday after Majority Rule Day celebrations. Yesterday.
I had occasion last year, and in particular at the very end of last year, to appear on Mixed Views, which is a talk show hosted by the one and only Laverne Gardner, via, and I don't know if that's Facebook quite, but I think it's, anyway, she'll tell us some more about it. But Laverne is, I've known Laverne from, she was a, I can't say little girl, she was just much, a much, much younger girl. We all went to the same church together. Her mother was one of those human beings who just exuded with faith in God and passion for the things of the Christian faith, and who was kind of like that spiritual mother we all looked up to and feared for her disciplined approach to the faith, for sure, but a wonderful down-to-earth woman for sure, but a woman of prayer. Oh, my goodness gracious. When you walk in Laverne, I feel like, you know what? I need to go to here because I simply am not up to this task. But it was a long, enduring friendship. She, her husband, her sisters, all of us just have been around as friends for a long time. And I'm so delighted to have her join me this time as opposed to my joining her. Hi, Laverne. Welcome.
Hi, Shivago. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to join you on Z Live. I just want to say that even though I, you know, this is my first time actually on the show, I do try to tune in as often as I can when I am available. So I do tune in, but it's great to be here.
And intelligently chime in.
I appreciate you reading my posts when I make them and ask my questions. So thank you so much for doing that.
My pleasure. So today we are on a bit of a spot. So my understanding is there are questions that people have had about stuff that they think maybe I can address. And so Laverne is such a wonderful interviewer and such a wonderful conversationalist. So we've agreed to do it in that fashion today. So
no problem. You're being so gracious. I appreciate that because the reality is I like to talk. Yes. Well, absolutely, 100% like to talk.
I told somebody, I don't know why I so much like to talk as I like to share, which requires talking.
This is true. I love to share, but I love to talk. However that works.
Yes,
so I am excited, and I do have some questions, and so we want to get right into that as soon as you say go. We want to ask these questions.
I'm at your disposal.
Great. So let's deal with the elephant in the room first, and then we'll move on from that. I know between yesterday and today, we've talked ad nauseum about it. So let's kind of just tackle that, and then we're going to go from there. It's not so much the elephant in the room, right? It's in the room. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit. But first, before we get into what transpired, we'll start with what happened yesterday, and then I'll work to the other question that goes along with it.
Right.
So we're going to talk about, of course, what happened yesterday during the speech at the graveside. It's not the graveside. I don't want to call it that. I just can't think of the word. It escapes me right now. But
it was on the side of the grave, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. But they call it something. Anyway, whatever. We know what happened with Lady Pinling. Sorry, Dame Marguerite. I have to correct myself. Mm-hmm. With Dame Marguerite Pinling and her coming up and speaking. And she was displeased about something. I'm not sure really what prompted everything that happened after that. But what I want to ask about that day is, well, what is feeling? Does majority rule day need to be an actual holiday? An actual day that we have off?
You know, in the context of our history, I can't argue that it could be a holiday. I can't argue, like having made it a holiday,
I am not displeased, dissatisfied, or believe it should not have happened. If it were not a holiday, but a day we continue to commemorate without a holiday, I would still not have been challenged by it, because I do believe it was a significant point in our history. I do believe that. And so if the government, if the state made the decision as it did to commemorate that in the form of a holiday, I'm fine with that. So long as it does not become an instrument for partisan political promotion, I'm good with that.
And Shivago, sorry, you kind of hit the nail on the head. That's where I am. Mm-hmm. Are we really looking at it as what it is, majority rule, not discounting that, okay, this was the party and, you know, but the people who were involved, are we really focusing on this is what they did, this is what they went through, their experiences, and we're so grateful that that happened? Are we looking at it in that light, or are we just looking at it in the light of PLP all the way?
Well, you know, you cannot prevent a party from owning its role in the achievement of something nationally. So you cannot deny, for instance, and you will not, we will not be able we shouldn't feel a setback because the FNM, as an example, celebrates that it was the party that facilitated private media in the Bahamas. Another significant event. I'm not suggesting it's majority rule event, but it was a significant something to have happened. So it will own that. The PLP will be able to say we were the instruments by which national insurance was instituted, the College of the Bahamas, and so forth and so forth. So a party always has the right to claim those things as their legacy. When something becomes national, though, when you are forcing or you are compelling the nation to take note of something because it is significant, and you put it in that national sphere, and you are using national resources, you can still celebrate it as a party, but the government has to promote it as a national achievement and accomplishment and recognition, devoid of any partisan political perspective. That's a funny little line to walk.
Right, to try to straddle.
That's the reality of it. It's that it was an event that benefited the entire nation. Even if a political party was essentially the instrument by which that happened. But then let's remember now, at the time, there was no other political party saving and except for the two, the Progressive Liberal Party and the United Labour Party. Well, I mean, there was the Labour Party and what have you. So, but the big boys in the room were these ones. And then we have to argue if you try to argue this from a partisan political point of view, you then have to argue, well, without the facilitation of the Independent and the Labour Party, you don't get to this achievement.
Right.
Okay, so it's hard to be so partisan in your suggestion that it was solely a Progressive Liberal Party achievement if you take into consideration what the Independent candidate and the Labour Party candidate, so that's Cartwright and folks on Fox, did to usher
right.
in that.
They essentially stood with the Progressive Liberal Party in order for the Progressive Liberal Party, you know, and I'm sure your listeners may know, but some may not know, in order for the Progressive Liberal Party to achieve majority rule. And so it's important, like you said, to also factor that in, because had they just decided to stay independent on their own, so to speak, this would not have happened. So it's important for us to have, you know, to make sure that we have all of that in context.
Or to throw their support in the opposite direction.
Or to throw their support in the opposite direction.
We would have been talking about majority rule delayed day.
Right. We would have been talking about when it almost happened. Y'all remember when this almost happened?
Well, it might have happened, but it might have happened later.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We were saying that almost happened then, but no, it didn't happen then. Then 10 years later or whatever. But anyway.
Yeah, so I'm not burnt about it one way or the other, quite frankly.
Okay. Well, if it was, and of course, I'm just saying this is all hypothetical. How would you like to see us celebrate or signify that day? Fine, it's already holiday. Like, have you ever thought about that? What would you imagine that it would look like if you had a say?
You know, the only way that I could imagine us properly celebrating it is in the context of the victory of prejudice, of the victory of equality over prejudice. Okay.
Freedom, I like that.
Freedom.
Expand on that a little bit more when you say that.
Right. See,
hey guys.
I think hey guys. We have to remember now. Majority rule. Let's be clear. It's a reference to the Black Bahamians versus the minority, because it was a reference to the fact that a minority segment of our population was essentially the governing group of the country prior to 1967, January 10th. And,
right.
And so it's a race issue. Now, guess what? In a race issue, the white minority got more of the popular vote than the Black majority candidates. But they didn't get the same result in seats. There was an 18-18 tie in seats between the two parties. Right? And a white Bahamian and a Black Bahamian threw their support behind the majority Black party, the PLP, founded by two white Bahamians, so that the government of the country was in the majority a Black Bahamian group of people. It's a reference to race. Now, what is it that I want to celebrate about race? That there are more Black Bahamians than white Bahamians? Really? Because that was a function of history. It had nothing to do with our designing it that way. So do I want to, am I celebrating that, you know, there are more Black Bahamians than white Bahamians? Am I celebrating that, white Bahamians are the minority? No, I'm celebrating that there was a time in the country where the color of your skin mattered to the extent of your liberties, to the extent of your freedoms, to the extent of your treatment, which was in effect a racist scenario.
Right.
So that majority rule happened was a victory for dealing with this issue of race domination. And if it's anything to be celebrated and advanced, is that equality in our country is a virtue we should herald and promote and progress. Because as you don't want, I don't think we want a notion that it's okay to dominate a group as long as it's a white group versus a Black group. Right? I don't think that's what, I think we want to acknowledge that it was wrong for white. Let me ask a question. If we go to election and for some on planet Earth, the people of the Bahamas decided to elect a majority government that had mostly white Bahamians, what would we say?
We would say that's racist.
No, but if we say that's wrong, I mean, like, if that's your choice, if that's the government, if that's the people's choice.
But we would still have an issue with that. You know our people, and you know we would have absolutely have an issue with that.
I agree, and that's why I'm saying what that would then boil down to is there that being an issue of racism. That's
So what is it that we don't want prejudice to prevail in the country. And so if we're going to celebrate majority rule day, we should celebrate a victory over prejudice and keep promoting that as such, equality as an essential aim in the Bahamian story.
Okay, I like that. I don't know if we'll ever really get to that notion, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, it is, the reality is nothing happens. It is not going to happen it's not going to just happen. This is what leadership exists for. Leadership.
Right, we have to be intentional.
That's right. And put the values and virtues forward that you want us to subscribe to. I like to tell people that I have a passion for righteousness, even if I don't have a perfection of it.
Right.
Right. And that leads me to promote and to pursue it. And so that's.
Then we need to ask the question is, does leadership possess a passion?
Well, I certainly believe that the people who championed the majority rule advance believed in elevating the masses, and they seem certainly in their rhetoric and behavior, as far as I could tell, to believe in this equality, right? Now, are we today putting that front and center as an issue? I don't even think what I just said has even risen up as a part of the dialogue in the majority rule celebrations. And you can tell me if I'm wrong. I didn't hear it either,
but I certainly think that it should be the major part of the conversation. But, you know, that's just my humble opinion.
Yep. So we'll see. Well, you know, right. One good thing is you're all younger generations of people. You all have a chance to take up the mantle and stuff.
I, you know what? I love how you say that, like you and I are so far in age. Eh? I love that. Thank you.
And I treat you just like how I treat you just like how the older people do. Even if you do, you know how these young people have to go.
Right. Right. And so we're going to, and that's really what I wanted to talk about. I'm sorry to the listeners if you were thinking that I was going to get into the back and forth or whatever, what happened yesterday, but I'm really not going to.
But ain't nobody know what happened.
Who knows? Right. And that is why I don't want to get into it anymore unless Dame Marguerite releases a statement and comes out and says, this is why I said A, B, C, D has been happening. I don't want us to get into suppositions, assumptions, and all of that. So
but, you know, I did have an inside voice that suggested to me that maybe there was a bit of misreading of her comment in terms of personalizing it to Minister Mitchell, because right. He was in effect disturbed about something he did, but as chairman,
she was calling on him
to make it right, yeah. And so what it was, in fact, I do not know, but it seemed to have offended her sense of history, her sense of context, her sense of importance of herself and her husband in matters. Something seemed to have been overlooked for sure. And she seemed like she needed to set history right. Now, you know, I said to someone who is in their 80s, very familiar with politics, very familiar with the PLP and so forth, I mentioned this to them. And I mentioned her statement that she had to carry Sir Lyndon to South Andres, who nobody knew, and introduce them. And you know, the person said to me, without breaking a breath, they said, that's for sure. That is for sure. That she was the known quantity in South Andres and not him.
Right.
And I think that's quite telling. So, and I think to her, she was saying was, listen, man, you know, there were some roles played, and if you're going to be fair to history, you got to recognize all the roles.
People who played those roles, right.
Yeah.
So,
but I also thought it was interesting, the history she gave. Boy, you know, it really is something to talk to these folks and to you even read what they write. You know, when I was a minister, I went and I visited with Dame Margaret. And I didn't do it for any official reason or anything. For some reason, I just felt like her place and importance in history for me as a younger political figure. I wanted to just sit down and talk to her and hear from her, you know, and which I did. But when she mentioned some of the things that she mentioned, it was really interesting to hear her perspective and her take on it. Like, you know, my husband wasn't even around.
Right. Like, that was the first time for me. That was the first time I heard that. That stayed with me.
So, I mean, I had to, and I was prepared.
Right.
If they didn't let him do it, because I had all my documents. I mean, that was really vivid and profound to hear.
So, you know, and I think it's important for us to really learn and to know the history, you know, rather than just saying beyond us enjoying the holiday, because listen, don't knock me. I'm all for a holiday. I'm all for a holiday where you don't have to go to work, right? But I think it's also very important for us to get as much and to learn as much as we can about why we're doing the things that we're doing, so that we gain an appreciation for those people who helped to pave the way,
and for the cause, and for the difference, yeah. The difference that they make to our present realities. You know, the truth of the matter is that we do a poor job at intentionally celebrating holidays. We really do, outside of maybe Easter and Christmas. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't do a very good job at commemorating. We do a good job at having the holiday.
Right. We're very good at that. I think we've mastered that.
We go away.
But not so much the why of, why are we having this holiday? What is the purpose of this holiday?
Yeah.
Why should this be important? And you know what? If we don't highlight that enough and emphasize that enough, eventually what happens is it becomes nothing. It's just like, for some reason, something happened 20, 40 years ago. And anyway, just appreciate the day off. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. My adult daughter, who was in college, you know, I asked her about majority rule day. And she had a vague notion of it, vague. And so it was a great opportunity then to have a discussion about it. And she was intrigued. She did not know some of the realities that prevailed in the Bahamas prior to that day. She did not. Because to her, these are things that were done in South Africa and those kinds of Jim Crow South. But this was not
right for
the Bahamas. And it was good to have that conversation.
Well, Shivalka, I'm not embarrassed to say publicly that when I need to understand what has happened, why we're doing what we're doing, I go to my nephew. Listen, the history of the Bahamas, there isn't much that he does not know. And so I'm like, Christoph, why? So tell me some more about this. But I'm happy to go to him, because you don't always get that from younger people, that they know so much about the country and the history of the country and why this happened and how this happened. And no, actually, this was such and such. And so I'm encouraging history. Let's begin to share that and have conversations so that we pass these rich traditions and this rich information so that we know who we really are, where we came from as Bahamians. You know, I'll come off my soapbox having said that, because I got more questions for you.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're gonna go to the news break. I'm sorry, producer, we spring straight past a break, but we can make up. You ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're gonna take a break from news, and when we come back, we're gonna continue our conversation with Laverne Wagner of the Mixed Review Talk Show. We'll be back after this break. We'll be right back.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Fidelity is concerned about your financial health as much as we're concerned about your physical health. We have free online banking, helpful management staff. Come and start your relationship today. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, everybody, everybody, come take my hand, we'll walk this road together, through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone, holla, get away with the same issue.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you wish to give us a call today, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. I'm here with the one and only Laverne Gardner, not of the mixed review, but of mixed views.
Talk. Yes, mixed views. Mixed Friday, views. 6:00 p.m. We stream live to Facebook, right on our Facebook page. We return next week, Friday, from our holiday break. But yes, mixed views. Friday, 6:00 p.m. on Facebook.
Apparently now I'm a.
Yes, you've had two, so you're an official co-host.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean.
Yeah, it's official.
Yeah. I just want to make sure people know. You know. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just in line with our previous conversation. By the way, I understand that I'm being told that Lady Pindling, Dame Marguerite, was not invited to that event and was not on the program.
Right. So I heard that as well. But again, because I don't know the full story, yeah. I mean, and we could spend the rest of the time talking about what we heard and what happened and what didn't happen. But because she didn't come out and specifically say, she alluded, but she didn't come out and specifically say, hey, you know something, you guys did not invite me.
Yeah, yeah. We don't know. We don't know what the deal is. We don't know.
Right. On top of that, I have more questions to ask you.
Okay, but let me just read this. This says, while yes, the PLP was in a box to join the PLP, it's really about the black majority finally taking governance over a white minority. I agree
That should be the focus, equality, that majority rule ushered in. Yes. This text says we would benefit from books by pioneers like Dame Marguerite. Sir Orville gave us a great historical glimpse in his book. Yeah, I agree. But you know, books, boy, books are projects. They take a lot of time and effort and so forth. You really got to be committed and dedicated and have some
right. And them. Then not only that, once the books are written, we actually have to be committed and dedicated to reading them, right?
Buying them first, because the people
right.
It costs money to buy the do the book, and the people them now need to at least try to recoup their investment, at least.
But you know, Shivago, and this has always been my thing, all of this that has happened, this is what we should be teaching in schools. Mm. Hammering that in. So that as well as our constitution, so that as students are coming through, they already have an understanding. It may not, so there are nuggets that books may not cover entirely, but the gist, there should be some foundation that you know what happened, you know how we got to this place, you understand how we achieved independence, we should readily available, being taught.
So let me give you
part of the curriculum.
So let me give you an alternative to having a book, since the books ain't here. So
right.
So let me give you the alternative. So my mother was a politically active person, not in terms of running for office or anything like that, but she was very active in the PLP in the first instance. And I remember being around all these very powerful people in the PLP because she was one of those people who was a part of their fundraising, all the cookouts, and she was one of the women's presidents and so forth. And then she left the PLP, joined the Free National Movement again, was very active. I mean, my mother was like active, connected to the leadership of these parties and so forth. So where I benefit my things was just my dialogue with her, my discussions with her about my curiosity about who this is, who that is, why this happened, when did this happen, what was that all about, and so forth. And her knowledge being transferred to me by virtue of my curiosity and her experience. So if you have an older family member, maybe they weren't as politically tied, but they know people who know people. And if you're really interested, that's a way. I'm not saying that's going to be the best way for everybody, but it's a way.
Well, let me say to you, absolutely, you are correct. You know that Mark, my husband, his grandfather was Garnet Lavarity. Yeah. And so what he did was encourage our children to speak with his mom, to sit down because she lives with us, and ask her about those days, what happened, to the point where my daughter, she went and kind of did an interview. It wasn't for, publicity, but just so that she could find out what happened back then, because you know about independence, you know about, what happened, you know about the formation of the Free National Movement, you know about all these, and to kind of so that you know.
Yeah, that's
so
that's,
that you know.
That's definitely a way, it can do more than what not ever having a book could do.
There are people who are still alive or family members who can share. But I wanted to ask you two questions. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, or have you explain how laws are enacted and which laws, how is the determination made, which laws, when you want to amend them, you can just go to Parliament and amend them, or they have to be put to a referendum? Or is that just a choice?
Right. So laws emerge in a number of ways. So generally speaking, when a party is trying to win office, it looks at issues in the country requiring address that might be popularly received by the voters. So if among those issues might be a piece of law or an amendment to existing law or the repeal of a law, then very often you will hear a party promise that as a part of its platform, that we will bring this new law, a law to privatize radio as an example, or we will amend this law, a law to provide equality between men and baby men and baby women and so forth and so forth. or this old law needed to come off the books, like there was the Boogery Law, right, where it was actually illegal in the Bahamas, in private or in public, to have homosexual sex. That law was repealed, meaning it was done away with. So parties, as a part of their platform and as a part of their canvassing the society and trying to figure out what they are concerned about, might get ideas in that way about what to do about legislation. Other times, advocacy groups or individuals with a passion for something might bring to the attention of the government, you know what, this law needs to be amended, this law needs to be changed. It could be an association that do it. It could be like the accounting association, the bar council, the chamber of commerce. Any number of groups might advocate for disability groups, for something to be introduced as law or something to be amended in the law or something to be repealed in the law. That could happen. It could happen in that way. Sometimes international events happen that prompt the change in laws. So for instance, you get blacklisted and all of a sudden your financial legislation are being introduced, amended, or repealed to reflect that change in circumstances. There is something called the Law Reform Commission. So their job is to continuously look at legislation and see the extent to which some may be outdated and need of repeal, amendment, or some, that kind of stuff. So they may send forward things. Sometimes ministries, in the course of their work, decide, oh, we can't get this done because the law does not permit it. And they will come to the government and to the minister and say, Minister, this needs to be changed in the law, added to the law, so forth and so forth. So there are many ways in which a law, academics could introduce notions of additions to your law, repeals, et cetera. Once the government, meaning the cabinet of the Bahamas, accepts the need to make some new law, amendment to the law, or repeal of a law, the ministry concerned with that particular area of the law, whether it was finance or education or what have you, will bring a cabinet paper along with a draft bill. Now, they may not have a draft bill before actually asking the Attorney General's office to draft something or the Law Reform Commission to draft something and so forth. And they bring that to the cabinet of the Bahamas for review. The cabinet reviews it. It might send it back saying, no, this needs to be changed, that needs to be changed. But once the cabinet agrees the recommendation, then the government goes and lays that piece of bill before the parliament for first reading, second reading and debate, third reading and committal. And once the both parliaments have dealt with that matter and approved the bill goes to the Governor General for assent, and that becomes the law of the Bahamas. The Constitution can be changed by virtue of the same process with a two-thirds majority vote in the thing for non-entrenched provision. There are some provisions that are called entrenched provisions, meaning the Constitution says, you want to change me? You go and get the parliament to vote 75% in favor, and then you go to the people and get them to vote in the majority. Not 75%, but whoever show up and vote, if the majority, 50 plus one vote, then that law, that constitutional provision, that entrenched provision is changed.
Okay, so that's how we determine what goes to referendum and which doesn't. Yeah. If it's only an entrenched law.
That's right. Only entrenched provisions of the Constitution require a referendum. Now, the government may decide on a change to the Constitution to go to referendum anyway. It's just because it wants to get the whole country to weigh in on it, but it's not. Right? You're muted.
Sorry. So, yeah, sorry. So like, for example, just going off of what you said.
Just before you go for it, we have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller, we're listening to you.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, we can hear you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lang. In regards to the referendum and the law changes and everything, when we had that referendum the other day, when we had our gaming act, And we had this, you know, the country had come to a heated spot in our history where we were wondering about gambling in the casinos versus gambling in the lumber houses. And they brought the referendum, spent, I forget how much millions of dollars we spent to get that referendum done. The referendum went out there, and the people voted against gambling. The people said no. The government at that time, he promised the number fellas that they was going to get their way. But they came back and told us that was not a referendum. That was a popularity vote. They wanted to see how popular it was. But it wasn't a real referendum. But we spent millions of dollars, I think, having the process done. The people did their vote. And second point, Mr. Lang, in regards to the weekend or the holiday situation, it's in Agnes' graveyard. Now, I really think if it's Mr. Pinlin's birthday and we want to honor him as an individual, we want to remember his birthday, I would say we could go down there and invite people. Let's go down. We honor the father of the nation. Today is his birthday. But when it comes to a national holiday, a majority rule day, I think that belongs to the entire Bahamian populace. And that should be celebrated, not at an individual's mausoleum or graveyard site. We could have gone in Rawson Square, to A.D. Hannah's graveyard, to Milo Butler, to Cecil Wallace Whitfield, to all the way our forefathers, and say, this is where we have it this year. Or this is what church service we can have this year. But when they choose to every year march to St. Agnes to celebrate, I can see some ruckus happening because it becomes either a Mr. Pinlin thing or a PLP thing, but it's not a Bahamian majority rule. We should have that in the public square and let me all Bahamians decide who go in and who ain't coming, not Miss Pinlin family and this other one family. That's what I think about it. Have a good day.
Thank you. Well, firstly, let me say, I appreciate that sentiments from Sparky, but first let me say that the referendum that the Christie administration had was not about an entrenched provision of the Constitution. It was a choice they made to go to referendum, and they did, in fact, have the power to ignore you having so done. But see, an entrenched provision, you got to do what the people say.
And that is actually what I was, before Sparky called, that is what I was going to use as an example to say that was not an entrenched part of the Constitution that required.
That's right.
That required a referendum.
That's right. So the government was under no mandate. So just as the government could go to Parliament and carry a bill and vote on the bill, and the bill passes, and then come back and say, you know what? The heck with that. We're going to repeal that. They have the power to do that, right? But if the government goes to referendum because the Constitution required it to do so, and there is a vote taken, it has to do what the people say.
Right.
So that referendum was more like what they call a placebo, which is really a kind of popular vote gathering poll. So, you know,
personally, as I've said to, you know, people, I think that because there were allegedly people already gambling, even though it was illegal, I think that maybe the government at that time assumed that it would come back as a yes, only to discover that people, when they had to actually go and vote, say then it was no. But that's just my feeling.
I agree with you. And I also think that the government felt obligated to the numbers operators to do that. I do think so.
Yeah.
So even though there were some mitigating factors in terms of international regulatory sentiments that might have pushed it in that direction, I think those were all justifications. I think that this was a promise made to those operators. And in the end, the government, the Christie administration decided to abide by that sentiment. Now, as for going to the graveside, and because it's a public holiday, we should do we should do go to Russell Square, go to everybody. No, the PLP could do whatever wishes. That was not a national government state function going by Zelensky's grade. That's the PLP, Progressive Liberal Party. And the Progressive Liberal Party could do whatever it wishes to do in its political party's name. So I don't, whether they want to go to Sir Lyndon's grave every single day of the year, that's up to them. That's not a state from public resources being expended in that way. So I can't agree that that's what should happen because it's a public holiday, because they were not, this was not the government doing that. Prime Minister Christie was there. I mean, Davis was there because he's the leader of the PLP. Mr. Mitchell was there because he's the leader of the chairman of the PLP. Other members of parliament and those were there because they are PLPs. And Lady Dame Margaret was there because, I mean, this was her husband and so forth and so forth. So I don't know about that. We have a call on the line, by the way, Laverne. Let's take that. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Hey, Mr. Lang.
Yes, sir.
Happy New Year to you.
Same to you, my friend.
Well, you know, well, we always say use the leader of the FNL. But I'm talking politics, because in all of that.
I know the leader of the opposition very well, you know, the FNL.
Well, you know what we mean, us as a people.
I got you, bro.
But I just called to tell you that you on target as it relates to facts. No, as we do, you discussing Selendon Penglin issue, and you know, we don't chase the dead, we don't go behind the dead, we move forward. But I wanted to say that to thank you for putting us online and reminding us that we are focused as a people, and we have to continue to make our positive contribution and build a nation. Penglin has done well.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate you calling. Laverne, we're going to take a break, pay our respects to our sponsors, and then when we come back, we'll continue discussing the questions you have. Ladies and gentlemen, listening to Z Live, I'm Chivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together. Whatever weather, cold or warm.
I ain't marsh the car. The lady run into me marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
2023's first installment of Fish Fry Fridays promises to be a classic. Friday, January 27th, it's a massage throwback to the days of 601. As former lead vocalist Colin Nasty Boy McDonald on Wild Boy Ferguson and the rest of the Massage Excitement Posse. It all goes down at Margaritaville, downtown Nassau at the 12 Volt Bar. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. $25 entry fee. Or enjoy the fish fry buffet for only $55 before the event and enjoy complimentary access.
Who is it? It's the plumber. I've come to fix this.
Margaritaville, downtown Nassau, and Visage presents a special edition of Fish Fry Fridays with special guest Colin McDonald. Friday, January 27th, Fish Fry Fridays.
I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabab Ulang, your host. We're so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, you can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. I'm here with Laverne Gardner of Mixed Views. And let me say to you, Nassau, John West is here to put shoes on your feet. We've got your family's feet covered for every occasion. Check out the variety of women's sandals and slippers, heels and working shoes, men's sneakers and safety boots available now. And kids, we didn't forget you. Check out our boys' boat shoes, girls' sandals and school shoes. Now open in the Carmichael City Shopping Center behind Wendy's. Telephone number 242-820-9715. Let us put shoes on your feet. All right, Laverne, we're back. We're taking some queries, some questions you have. Go right ahead, ma'am.
All right. So stay in Parliament for right now. Let's talk about the Speaker of the House. And I'm talking about the position, not the actual person who is currently the Speaker of the House. When it's time to elect the Speaker of the House, how is that done, and what exactly is the Speaker of the House role?
Okay. The Speaker of the House is elected by the members of the House of Assembly. As a general rule, there's a discussions in advance. That's on the first day of the meeting of Parliament, the Speaker of the House is elected, right? And generally speaking, there's a kind of conversation between the leader of government business and the leader of opposition business. They agree nobody's going to oppose the nominee. We're going to put forward this nominee. So the governing party puts forward a nominee and so forth. And nobody can. And so we're going to have a consensus vote on the speaker. And that is one of the reasons why it has been typical for the governing party to stand in for the first nomination of the speaker. So somebody from the governing party will stand and nominate that person, and somebody from the opposition party will second the nomination, because you then have an agreed consensus vote on the speaker. So that's
okay. And this will take place prior to
the discussion would happen in advance. Yeah, that you kind of have a little caucus between you and the two leaders of government and opposition business. We're going to nominate Alvin Ingram. We don't have any difficulty with that, blah, blah, blah. And so, boom, you get a speaker with no contention, blah, 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 voted on. And that has been, it's essentially the history of votes of speakers in the House Assembly. The role of the speaker is to maintain order in the House of Assembly, to ensure that the rules of the House of Assembly are abided by, and to ensure that that all parties have a voice and an opportunity to express themselves on behalf of their constituents and so forth. That's the role of the Speaker, to maintain order in the House of Assembly, according to the rules of the House of Assembly.
Which lead time in terms of training does the speaker have? Is there any training or any, these are some of the basic things that you need to know.
You get voted on that day. And the leader of the party might have said, Alvin, we're going to nominate you for speaker, blah, 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 blah. But generally speaking, not always, generally speaking, speakers have been in the House of Assembly for a time. I mean, Arlington Butler and those, they've been those a long time, right?
So they're versed.
Only in recent times you have some of these newer persons who come in, but that's why you have a chief clerk, because his responsibility or her responsibility is to guide the speaker. And so that's why a lot of caucus taking place between the speaker, because they are, the speaker is seeking guidance from that person.
From them.
That's their job, is to guide the speaker.
Okay. You know, I was thinking about the Speaker of the House. I don't know if you were following what was going on in the United States. Mm-hmm. It took, what, 14 or 15 votes? 15 votes for Kevin McCarthy.
Which is not the longest. One round went 2 months, almost 100 years ago.
Wow. Well, I was like, I don't think that this would ever happen here. But, you know, I thought about that. Like, it was midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And these people finally, I mean, you know, hats off to him. I told them my pride wouldn't allow me to keep being rejected. I'd be like, okay, thank you very much.
Oh, he was listening to the song Poise of Air.
He was, and he did.
Yeah.
I tell someone, he blew, you know, the saying, at first you don't succeed, try again. I said, he changed that to try.
Well, you know, they have a threshold number that you have to meet in order to be speaker. Right. In our context, it's just a majority vote. So right. If the governing party wins, except for members of the governing party voting against the governing party, that can't happen in the Bahamas. And if members of the governing party vote against the governing body have an issue.
Right. It's not going to happen. Well, we know the governing party, they're not going to vote any other way, you know. And then, two, when you look at even if you have an issue where maybe there is a disagreement with who the speaker is, if we're going with the majority, and in recent elections and the outcome, it's been a situation where even if you disagree, that person is still going to get in because one party have 1,000 seats, and of course I'm exaggerating, and one party only have 5. So yeah. Really.
Yeah, it's a vote. And you should be able to get the speaker that you believe will cooperate with the cause, because you know you could elect a speaker who is obstinate to you, and that could be challenging for any governing party. It could be not because a speaker could be unfair to its own
party. Right.
And so you don't need that either. So generally you do want to ensure that the person is a cooperative person, both sides, both ways. That's why it's generally a consensus vote. Person has to be regarded as a fair person, right? That's the idea. This text says, can the speaker be independent of both ruling and opposition parties? Yes, you could. Well, you asked that question on majority rule day. That is exactly what happened. Independent Cartwright became the speaker. And he was not a PLP or an FNM. I mean, or a UBP. But he became the speaker of the House of Assembly.
Has that happened since then, though?
Never.
In this country that you know of?
Never on Jesus' planet. Not since then.
That was the first and only time.
Only unique circumstance in which that happened.
Right. So going from the Speaker of the House, if you don't have another text, I want to talk about the role of the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
The role being, you know, to gain an understanding that even though it is opposition, it doesn't necessarily mean that everything that's brought forward in Parliament you oppose. Just for opposing sake. But what is the role of the opposition?
Let me just correct something. Somebody, not Cartwright, it was Brainerd.
Okay.
Speaker, right? Forgive me. Yes. Brainerd who became speaker. Yeah. Okay. And therefore, I suspect that Brainerd may actually have been a member of the PLP, and therefore, there was never such a thing.
There was never.
Yes. Never such a thing. So you see the tradition holding where you want a speaker that can wait with you.
So essentially, and I'm not saying again, you know, because people will take your words and misconstrue. I'm not saying that the current speaker or whomever is biased, but if you're looking for a speaker who will work with you, you're hoping for some bias. That's my 5 cents.
Well, I don't know that it's so much bias you're looking for as much as you want someone who is not going to be opposed to you, right? I mean, why would I want to elect a speaker who I'm sure would cooperate with me and at worst I knew was against me? Why would I do that? That would create a functional difficulty for any party, right? And so I don't think, I think that was more so the issue than anything else. Because we have seen situations where the government nominated a speaker and the speaker then turned around and was non-cooperative. That was not very pleasant. And Halston Moultrie was case in point. Right? So that'd be a difficulty.
Yes. So go back to my next question, the official role of the opposition.
Yeah. The opposition's responsibility is to, first of all, to be an alternative to the sitting government. That keeps the democracy viable, okay? So the opposition's fundamental role is to ensure that it is regarded as an alternative to the government so that just the threat of their existence and potential to replace the government is an effort to keep the government honest. Secondly, its responsibility is to critically review the behavior and conduct of the government, its policies, its regulations, its laws, etc., and to critically review it. It isn't there to go and simply, say, that's nice, that's wonderful. Even if a piece of legislation is good, it still can say, you know, it's good, but this could be better. That's the job, because that contention for ideas, that critical review is supposed to ensure laws, better policies, better conduct, better behavior. And then it has some constitutional responsibilities, so that the leader of the opposition has a constitutional responsibility in the respect of the appointment of certain positions in the government and so forth and so forth, because the law requires that he or she be consulted when certain matters are taking place. So those are the three fundamental. Yeah, responsibilities.
I am conscious of the time, so I have three more questions that I want to quickly get in.
Let's take our break, and then we'll ring them up as we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. I'm here with Vern Gardner of Mixed Views. We'll be back after this break.
Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm.
Fidelity is concerned about your financial health as much as we're concerned about your physical health. We have free online banking, helpful management staff. Come and start your relationship today. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Always on the go? Miss the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
Take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm. Send you know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to C Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us for these remaining moments of the show here on 96.9 FM Guardian Radio. I'm here with Laverne Gardner of Mixed Views. Night, Friday evening.
Fridays at 6 o'clock p.m. and we return next week Friday.
There you go. There you go. You had some other questions, sorry.
Yeah, I had three and then we're done. The first one is, and it's a little bit, I guess, away from Parliament per se, but when you think about governments, and I want to talk a little bit about businesses, you know, we're encouraged a lot to buy Bahamians, but then the response is always, it's so expensive. Did at any point in your time in government, did the government ever consider, well, listen, if Laverne, and I'll use myself, if Laverne is going away and purchasing her cereal for $3 and paying whatever duty on it, I know that there's no duty on cereal. This is just an example, guys. But let's say if there was duty or whatever, something, I'm purchasing something from a way that's 20% duty, but there is a business who sells this same product. Should there be a concession whereby business owners pay a little bit less? Their rate is different?
We do have situations in which there are opportunities for people to buy items bonded.
Right, but I mean, a bond is available to how many islands?
Well, the construction supplies, it's available to practically all islands, right? And, you know, so that the short answer is no. And the short answer is no because, remember, any concession you give to a business is, as in terms of custom duty, is an attempt to get a lower price for the consumer. But if the consumer is able to get a lower price for itself on a product that you basically only import anyhow, why would you want to discriminate for a consumer who happened to be in the U.S. and happened to be able to buy something and be able to get the thing in however they get it in, right? Because what really adds to the price of things is not only the duty, but essentially the other expenses attached to carrying that item in your store. So that's your rent, your salaries, your operating expenses, and then your profit margin. So all of that is adding to the cost of that item relative to when the consumer buys it in the US, because they buy it right at that store, maybe with all the other people's operating expenses, et cetera, but those are lower relative to the Bahamas. And so the consumer gets a deal on that item. So the government is not going to be able simply on trying to reduce the duty relative for the business person to be able to sell that lower. What the government typically does is if it's a locally produced item, it has a higher duty on the imported item for the consumer.
Right.
Arguing that
you can purchase it locally.
Well, arguing that there are more benefits to having a manufacturer rather than simply a retailer who is merely buying the product and bringing it in for you, as opposed to somebody who's actually producing the product and adding more value from a local content point of view.
Okay.
That's the argument.
All right. So we got about 7 more minutes. Yes, so gents. Mm-hmm. The first one is, currently, do you play any kind of role in the Free National Movement, whether it's advisory, whatever? And then the final question would be, having served in politics, what would be your top 3 takeaways, other than you're not doing it anymore?
I don't have any role in the Free National Movement. I cannot have any role in the Free National Movement, particularly in my responsibility as the executive director of the Government of Public Policy Institute at the University of Bahamas. Any person in any political party can call me for information or commentary can, whether that's the Progressive Liberal Party, the Free National Movement, the COI, etc. And I'm obliged by virtue of my experience and my position to share any point of view or perspective on any of those things. It doesn't happen regularly at all.
Once we pigeonhole, once you know.
But I do get calls from all sides though. Yeah, but I'm saying it doesn't happen regularly, but I do get calls from all sides. Right? And you had a second question to that.
What would be, having served in politics, what would be your top three takeaways?
My top three takeaways would be, one, you really only benefit the country, and the country only benefits from someone who has taken the time to authentically understand, genuinely understand the issues and have a genuine interest in doing something positive. That if this is something you're doing because they called on you and you just have an ego tripping about it, if this is something you're doing because you just think you were built by God to do this, if you are just doing something because, you know, it might advance your financial or career in other ways, you're not gonna be a very impactful person. You're not. I don't think so. I mean, and I think you run the risk of actually injuring the process because you're in the way. Secondly, Bahamians themselves, they ain't gonna hear me say this, but Bahamians are as much a help and hindrance to their own political progress as anybody else. Because whether they realize it or not, politicians are canvassing their desires every day and operating on the basis of those desires. So if they go into a constituency and they see that the vast majority of people in the constituency don't give a hell about the constituency or the country, but only interested in getting their people a government job, their people a government contract, their people a government house and all that kind of stuff, they will operate with you on that basis, and you will not get the benefit of things for your community, for your country at all. You'll get one or two things for your personal people while you keep giving them vote, and you'll see the constituency and the country continue unchanged by that particular politician or group of politicians. And then thirdly, I would say that if your mindset, your effort and aims are right, you can have an enormously positive impact on this country. And I've seen it in some of the things that Sir Lyndon did, and some of the things that Mr. Ingram did, in some of the things that Mr. Christie did, and people might argue in some of the things that Dr. Minnis did. Mr. Davis is new in his administration, and I think the verdict is still out on what that impact might be. But you can have a seriously positive impact on things. Some have had more than others because some have been more focused, dedicated, and experienced than others. But you can definitely have a very positive impact.
I love that. If you have the right mindset and you're committed to doing the right thing, you absolutely. And you have the support.
You have to be committed to doing the right thing because there are forces in the political machinery. I'm not talking about just at the party level or the constituency level, but across the country, there are forces that can compel you to do things that are not good for the country. Maybe good for them, but not good for
the country. But not good for the country as a whole.
Some of that.
All right, Mr. Lyne, Shivago, we got two more minutes. If there's anything, so I'm eking out all of it. If there was, in hindsight, because we say hindsight is always 2020, if there was anything that you could have done differently, what would be the thing?
Let me just read this before I go. It says, thank you, Mr. Lyne. I've seen much better speakers than the last two. The one before was a poor president. One is completely biased to our party and leaves much to be desired. I pray in the future we can have speakers without an agenda who will know their role. what would I have done differently?
Mm-hmm. If there's anything, and you're free to say nothing.
No. I would have made an attempt to be a more pleasant person. I would have. I mean, it wasn't that I was trying to be unpleasant, but I was a very, I had always been a very serious person. In politics, that doesn't bode well for the rapport you could have with people. And having a good rapport with people is helpful in helping you to help them, because they get on board with you better.
Right.
So I definitely would, I would have smiled more. I would have tried to be a little bit more accessible, you know, approachable, right? But you learn those things with years sometimes.
Yeah. What do they say? With age brings wisdom?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
It's important. You know, I don't need to be liked, but it's good to be liked. And it's useful in politics and in leadership to be liked. But I would not trade honesty for likability. I've seen that too many times in politics. So I'd rather be disliked by you and be honest and upfront and straight than to be liked by you and be dishonest and crooked.
You know, I think that's the perfect note for us to end on. Well said.
Thank you very, very, very much, Laverne. And I expect
it has been a pleasure. I hope I can have the opportunity to do this again, but it has been a pleasure. So thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely, you will. And I appreciate it very much. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host out here. Laverne Gardner of Mixed Views. So glad she was able to join us today. If God spares life, we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.